is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Coach Steve Moore, and you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Lensing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. 107 AM J. We are here. Episode 7 and 8 of The Last Dance.
Yep.
Started out a little bit slow. And then really picked up at the end of episode 7 and on into episode 8.
Yeah, I will say something about his whole father thing. I didn't realize his dad was like missing for 3 weeks. I don't know why. I mean, obviously I was, once again, I keep saying this, I was 6 at the time. So that wouldn't have really registered with me. But even to this day, like, I never, I guess, went on a deep dive to look at, the history of Michael Jordan before. Because I didn't realize his dad was literally missing for 3 weeks. Like, that's
crazy. I thought it was weird how they laid it out, because they kind of made that maybe not that big of a deal that he was missing for that long. Like, well, mom always talks to him, and then it was strange. I thought how they presented it in that way, and then clearly got him upset with the, and I remember this back in the time, you know, the ties to his supposed gambling that, you know, they talked about last week in episodes 5 and 6, and he just got upset that was being tied to potentially his dealings with gamblers and all that stuff. But it became clear, it was clear in the moment how much it affected him. And then as we go through and we can talk about more of the rest of the episode, just the huge impact that his father played in his life while his father was alive, and then continued to just play a huge role in what he did. And I have a question for you as we go forward into episode 8 that I'll save for when we get to that point. But it was something that struck me, and I'm not sure. I didn't see anybody talking about it on Twitter, but I just got a question for you when we get to that point.
All right. I have to say episode 7 got some Tito love, man. I liked it. Some Terry Francona, baby. That's what I like to see. I was so excited to, like, I don't know if I sent you the tweet about him being mic'd up at a fall league game. I don't know if you saw that I sent it to you.
You sent it to me, but I didn't look at it today.
He was talking about how he had progressed it for the 2 months and things, and then he goes and Jordan hits a triple on it. He was mic'd up for a game, so it wasn't like it wasn't scripted or anything, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it was completely mic'd up. It was pretty cool to see that play out. So if you want to check that out, it's on the Indians Twitter account. They posted it today. I thought it was interesting. You know, obviously we kind of knew that they were going to talk about baseball. The more interesting piece that I got of not related to basketball was, you know, they were talking about Space Jam, and I for some reason have an affinity for Space Jam because I seem to always talk about it, Mike. But
you do have a strange affinity for the movie Space Jam. I will admit.
But listen, I never knew anything about the Space Jam games. Did you know about the Space Jam games?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Like I didn't know anything about it, but
that bubble. I mean, that was one of the things that when the NBA was talking about how they're going to come back, they talked about building like the Space Jam bubbles, like they did for Jordan when he was filming. Yeah, those games kind of took on a mythical quality, because again, back in the time when we're talking about, there wasn't the social media to report on all that stuff, so it was more of this sort of hush hush. These games are kind of legendary, and they're going on behind the scenes, and there was whispers about them, and people kind of talked about them, but I had never seen any footage of those games for sure.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to see that, and obviously, I wish they would have shown more of that. I think that would have been kind of just cool to see all the players playing together. Because obviously, like, you saw Reggie was there, like young Reggie Miller. And it was cool to see. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, that was fun. It was fun to kind of see what, again, had been sort of a mythical thing that had been out there. And clearly he was at that point very driven to come back. It was quite clear that he wanted to come back and revenge what had happened there against Orlando when he again came up small. I think it was, you know, he averaged 31 a game in that series.
Yeah.
But he just had a couple uncharacteristic plays that just didn't fit with the rest of his career. Yeah, so he was clearly driven to come back after that.
I didn't like that the frame. I saw a tweet. I'll see if I can find it real quick. I didn't like the frame, though, that he was. I mean, like, to your point, he averaged 31 points a game. And I know he said he had uncharacteristic me. Oh, here, Rob Perez, Worldwide Wob. He said, oh, God, here we go again with the MJ had no legs. That's why they lost to Orlando excuses. He averaged 31 points in the series, 32 points. Phil just said the team was at full power. They got beat. It's okay to admit and still believe they're the best ever, but they absolutely got beat. And, you know, I know we could talk about his field goal percentage in that series wasn't very good, but still, he averaged 32 points a game. And when your best player, who hasn't played at all, is averaging 32 points per game, and your team loses. And by the way, if you saw the scores in all the games tonight, Mike, I almost 87.
Oh, right.
I think the highest scoring game I saw tonight was 104 to 102 or something like that. And I was like, my gosh, if that happens in the NBA now, you're like, what the heck happened in that game? So
you forget about the percent, you know, you forget about the percentages that he scored. When you're scoring 95 a game and he's getting 33 a game or 31 a game or 30 a game, that's a third of the points compared to teams now that are consistently scoring up around 110, 115. So yeah, it was a different game.
I just think, you know, you can't have it both ways. Like, I understand the point of view that he was, you know, hit the legs and things, but at the same time, he's still averaging 31 points a game. And maybe it's the whole, they haven't played together, but you can't really make that argument because he'd been played with half the team already.
That team wasn't, they were like 34 and 31 when he came back. So they were just scratching along. You know, the year before they had a very good year and finished third in the East, like we talked about last week. But that year, he comes back in the 94-95 season, comes back in the spring of 95. And that team's 34 and 31 when he comes back. And they were scuffling, and it was a new group, and Horace was gone and playing for the Magic. And so you just look at that roster, and they weren't as good. They were missing that Horace Grant, Dennis Rodman guy, and you figure they're matched up with Horace Grant and Shaq. And so if Michael had been at full strength, could they have beaten him? Sure. But was that series a fluke based on the entire circumstance of him coming back, that team in and of itself not being very good, those guys having never played with Jordan before and him never having played with them? I think things happen. And again, he was at not his best, but you certainly couldn't say, oh, that guy came in and, man, he was a dog that whole series and averaged 17 points a game. I mean, he did average 31 points a game. So
let's go back real quick. The whole Scottie Pippen refused to go in the game and Tony Kukoc hits a shot to win the game. Like, that was something I didn't remember, obviously, either. That's pretty interesting. I mean, Scotty's not getting a huge, beautiful portrait over some of these episodes, I will say.
Well, you're getting to see, I think the doc has actually done a really good job of portraying all the different facets of Scottie Pippen, in that he had his rise from nowhere as the manager at Central Arkansas to the number 5 pick. You had a lot of love given to Scotty, that he was underrated and that he's one of the best players of all time and he's a great defender. And Jordan said, I don't win any of these without Pip. And yet you also had him questioning Pippen for the migraine game, which he was questioning at the time and still to this day, I think, doesn't necessarily feel that Scotty should have sat out that game or felt like he let him down in that game. Then you have this situation. You have the situation with his contract. Pippen had a lot of different dimensions and sort of moments in his career that helped to define him. And in the moment, that was a huge thing. Like, people really in the moment, you don't remember it, obviously, but at that time, that was really a black mark on Pippen as a teammate and as a team leader, because here he had been the second banana to Michael for those first three titles, and now here he has a chance to be the guy. And I think that's what caused him to want to sit out, is that he felt like he had inherited that mantle of being able to take the last shot, and he felt like, well, gosh, if Michael's here, clearly he gets that shot. It's not even a question. And now I've stepped up into that role and I'm not getting that opportunity. He's given it to somebody else. And so it's understandable that he was upset, but as the leader of that team, it just, you heard it. You heard it from his teammates that they just felt like it was inexcusable, and they got past it and eventually moved on, and everybody went and won three more titles together. But that was definitely in the moment. It was definitely a black mark on Scottie for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing that I found interesting was they were talking about how BJ Armstrong was the reason that Jordan came back. I never knew that story. Did you know that story, that he had eaten with BJ Armstrong? He's like, oh, you should come to the facility. And that's, I mean, I don't know if that's the whole story, but that seems like that was kind of what got the ball rolling. Did you know that story or no?
So I didn't know the BJ Armstrong breakfast.
Baker Square, baby. I love Baker Square got a name drop in the middle of the Last Dance and episode.
And they were eating their pancakes at Baker Square. Yeah, that was good. I enjoyed that. I remember it being where there was rumors that he was starting to hang around practice. And when you think about it, that was also with the baseball strike that sort of started to move him away from baseball, which, just go back to baseball for 1 second. It was amazing to hear Reinsdorf and Francona talk about, and what, Mickey Barrett, wasn't that the other guy?
Yeah.
So, you know, to hear those three guys all say that just if he would have had more time, that he could have made the major leagues. Now, I don't know if that's true or it's not true, but clearly his maniacal competitiveness and work ethic translates across anything athletics related. So I wouldn't doubt it. Now, maybe not at age 31 would he have been able to make it to the majors, but you wonder if he had been a baseball player from the time he was 22, if he could have made it. It's just interesting to hear all the guys that had that direct experience with him as a baseball player say.
It's the same argument that people make, that I think if LeBron, about when he was 30, 29, would have said, hey, I'm going to go play in the NFL. I want to see a player that would stop LeBron. I mean, I think LeBron would have been could have been a great NFL player too. But
yeah, I agree.
Obviously, I don't think he would have been the second best all time like he is in basketball. But right. I think if you look at what he would have done in the NFL, I think he would have been pretty, pretty accomplished.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's go back to the BJ Armstrong story. So no, I did not know about the breakfast at Baker Square, but I do remember there being this lead up of rumors that he's back in the practice facility and that he's thinking about coming back. And then I think it was, I got a kick out of the David Falk story about how he wrote three or four different press releases that they were going to put out to announce that he was coming back. And then Jordan's just like, I'll take it, and just writes, I'm back. And really, when you think about that, and I think about back to that moment, it's sort of just, I don't know, it encapsulates Jordan and who he is, who he was, just by saying, I'm back. That was the only message that he needed to get out there for people to understand what was going to happen.
Yeah, I actually remembered that from when I was a kid, because obviously that was about when, you know, so that was 95. I was 9 at that time. I think that was when I was starting to really get aware of what was going on, and, you know, in sports. You know, obviously, another thing too that kind of was at my disadvantage was in those years the Cavs weren't very good and the Indians were. So my focus was on the Indians and the baseball aspect of things, 95, 96, 97. So, and then the Cavs got good again after that. So, you know, I really think it was pretty cool to see. The other thing I was going to mention about the baseball thing, the Sports Illustrated thing, what were they thinking? Like, seriously, why would they write that about his bait? Like, yes, he wasn't as successful as But why would you write a scathing article about Michael Jordan? That's crazy.
What? I think you're just trying to sell magazines in the moment, and you're not necessarily, and they don't have any allegiance to Michael Jordan. There's no reason for them to, quote, protect him or do whatever.
They would never do that nowadays. They would never do that nowadays.
Well, Sports Illustrated has got to be on the cusp of complete and utter demise, I would think. I've had a subscription for 40 years, and I canceled mine within the last year. Sorry, Sports Illustrated, but it's just out of date with the way that we consume media today.
I get mine every month, but that was because I got it for free with some other purchase. Like, it was like,
there you go.
Get a free month. So, I don't know. Or free year. So
understood.
I don't really read them. I normally read the cover story and then I get rid of it. So
there you go. There you go. Yeah, it's, again, you look back on that time, and clearly I don't know that you would say that his baseball journey was a success, but I don't think you can look at it as a failure. I think you have to look at it as what it was in the moment, which I think clearly the more you saw as the doc went on tonight was just the powerful impact that his dad had on his life and the influence that his dad had on his life. And I think you, if I think back to those first three titles, I remember that. I remember his dad being sort of always kind of there and hanging around and being a part of his story. But then you see just how it impacts, and we'll talk about that fourth title. So the first one back after he returns from his baseball journey, and just the reaction that he had there at the end. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, but man, that was just, you could just see the impact that his father's death had on him as a human being and as a basketball player.
Yeah, for sure. And you could tell, you know, he said, I didn't want to wear 23 because my dad couldn't see me playing it. So that's why I wore 45. And then who was it that opened their mouth?
Nick Anderson.
Oh, Nick Anderson.
Yeah.
That's a mistake. Anyways, you know, I think like
they still beat him though. Orlando still beat him when he went from 45 to 23. So probably in the list of mistakes that were made, that one probably doesn't go down in the history of
the BJ Armstrong mistake.
Yeah, the BJ Armstrong mistake. The best part of that was just the scene of, I mean, you can't even describe Jordan sitting in his locker stall with the cigar and just swinging that baseball bat and just talking revenge on BJ Armstrong. Like, the guy was a maniac. I mean, he was just
not only that. I mean, BJ Armstrong had been on his team for 3 years,
right?
4 years.
He's like, he just wanted to kill this guy. Like, when he was sitting, and they showed him sitting in the chair, and he was still in street clothes, and he had the earring in, and he was watching Linda Cohn. Yeah, he's watching the TV, and just that look on his face is just like, he's like, if he could have gone through the TV and strangled BJ Armstrong right there, I think he might have.
Yeah, for sure. I thought he was pissed, Mike. There's no other way to put it.
Like, that was one of my favorites. That's one of my favorite scenes in the whole documentary. Is just him just swinging that baseball bat and smoking the cigar.
My favorite.
It's just hilarious.
My favorite scene came much later in the episode. The Gary Payton. Them playing the Gary Payton quote for him, yes, when he's watching it on an iPad. I was laughing at that one. That was pretty good. Like, what was Gary, like, even Gary Payton now saying, you know, I thought we had him beat, and I thought I had him. And Jordan's like, are you kidding me? We won the series. What are you talking about? Like,
all right, so here's my question. Maybe I read into this more, but I didn't see anybody say it, so maybe I was just off on what I was saying. But when he watched that, and then he was laughing, and then he started talking, and he said that, obviously, I had other things going on in my mind or in my head, I think was his quote. It was something to that effect. And then they go to, you know, they lose, obviously, the two games. After they go up 3-0, they lose the next two. And then they win game six on Father's Day. And so I started thinking, I'm like, did this guy, I don't want to say lose on purpose, but was winning that championship on Father's Day more than just a coincidence? Like, what did he mean when he said, I had some other things on my mind?
I don't know. I didn't think about that either. So to answer your question, I didn't even think about that.
All right. Obviously. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to have to go back and watch it again one more time, probably after we're done here, and just see that quote and hear what he said, because it just struck me as, man, did this guy, I don't want to say throw two games, because I'm sure he didn't throw the games, but did he really think about and plan through and say in his mind going into that series, looking at it, game six is on Father's Day, I'm coming back, my dad is going to be with me, I want to win this thing on Father's Day? Could that have possibly gone through his mind?
I mean, I possibly, but you know, I'm not buying it.
I'm not necessarily buying it either. I just thought it was weird what he said, you know, that I had some other things on my mind other than, you know, other than Peyton. So I don't know. It was interesting to me.
Yeah. Here, I'm going to see if I could find it. I think I've got it pulled up here for you, Mike. Hold on.
All right, good. So
go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you play it.
Well, I'm at Gary Payton, so just give me a second. I'm going to get the Jordan quote.
You just got to tire him out. And I kept hitting him.
Oh, this is
banging him and hitting him and banging him. It took a toll on my and then I feel myself resting him a little bit, and then the series changed. And I wish I could have did it earlier. I don't know if the outcome would have been different, but it was a difference. and beating him down a little bit.
The glove. I had no problem with the glove. I had no problem with Gary Payton. I had a lot of other things on my mind.
That was it. I had a lot of other things on my mind.
What does that mean?
Is he talking about like he didn't have a problem with Gary Payton because he had other bigger fish to fry? Maybe that's what he's talking about.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Gary but then it went right from there into, you know, they lose those two games and they come back and they win game six and they do it on Father's Day.
His facial expression though with Gary Payton says, I don't know if the series would have changed. Michael Jordan's facial expression.
Saying. Like, was it like he's like, eh, you know, let's just toy with these guys. If we win those two games, but man, it would be really nice to win this thing on Father's Day. I don't know.
It was
interesting because I don't know what that means that I had other things on my mind. I just don't know what that means. And then when he won it, I thought the other really powerful scene tonight was him laying on the floor,
exhausted,
crying. After winning that championship, and just like the sobs and how loud and just
it was almost it was very reminiscent. Like I'd never seen that before. Obviously,
I had never seen that before. I mean, but I had seen the video of that, but I don't know that I had ever heard the audio to go along with that. Man, that was
it. Reminded me a lot of LeBron in 2016, Mike. It really did. Like when he won for Cleveland, like it reminded me a lot of that. I mean, obviously, we couldn't hear LeBron nearly as much because there was like a million people around him when he was doing the same thing because he literally did it on the floor. But at the same time, like it was very somewhat reminiscent to me about that. But
yeah, I mean, that was. I think you have to take everything public versus private because clearly, I mean, he knew there were cameras in that locker room, but that's still like a private. Individual moment. He's laying there on the floor. There's really nobody else there. I think at some point somebody comes and kneels next to him, but it's just, you could just feel that emotion pouring out of him. And it goes back to what we talked about a few minutes ago, just how important his dad was in his life when his dad was around. And then just the influence that his father continued to have on him after the fact. And that scene, man, it was powerful to just see him laying on the floor and crying. And then you just think about everything that goes into winning a title and that second run that starts with him coming back and having all these new guys, these new teammates that weren't part of that first run, from Kerr to Wennington to Judd Bushler to all these guys that weren't part of that first title run. And he makes the comment that, you know, these guys weren't there with us. You know, they don't know what they're doing. So I gotta figure out a way to get them to understand what it takes in order to be able to win. I thought that at the end of episode 7, where he started talking about just his style of leadership, and that led to my favorite quote from tonight's two episodes for sure, where he was talking about that winning has a price and leadership has a price. And I just thought the way he said it, and then the way that the doc set that up, and how he talked about that he didn't ask his teammates to do anything that he wouldn't do, and they showed him winning the sprints during practice. And I think there's a great lesson to be learned there for players, people, that, you know, leadership is not only about what you say, it's also about what you do. And if all you do is talk, but you don't back it up with action, then those words can fall on deaf ears. But clearly, man, I mean, that guy just was so competitive. And then at the end of episode 7, where he's talking about trying to lift his teammates up and trying to get these guys to understand what it takes, and he's like, I need a break. And he's getting up out of the chair, and he's almost got tears in his eyes as he's talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was just a maniacal competitor, and clearly tried to demand that of his teammates. And we saw it a little bit tonight.
That was the first time we really seen him like really rag on his teammates.
But again, it's like I said, the things that you're seeing there, I don't think are things that are that unusual in a team setting, in a locker room, on a practice floor. Those are the kind of things that get said all the time. Now, those things aren't usually for public consumption. And obviously, he peppered in some colorful language in some of those quotes at practice and things. But if you've ever been around a basketball locker room, a pickup game, a gym, you've heard that kind of language. You've seen that kind of language. You've seen players talk to each other in that way. And I think that what we're seeing just is a guy who, as he said, was trying to push his teammates to get to the level that he demanded of himself. And I thought Kerr's comment about standing up for himself, and how from that moment on, when he kind of pushed Jordan in the chest and then Jordan came back and punched him, that was kind of the turning point in their relationship, where now Jordan respected Kerr because he stood up for himself, and because Jordan says, now I can go into the heat of battle with this guy and feel like he's going to come through for me. And so I just think that by pushing your teammates and by trying to demand the best of them, he was able to raise their level of play. And it didn't clearly work for every guy. I'm sure there were guys that he broke and that famously couldn't handle being his teammate. But for the guys who could handle that, who could take it, who did use it to spur them on to greater performances, those are the guys who, as he said, he wanted to bring them along for those championship rides. And clearly, 6 times he was able to do that.
Yeah. And I thought there was one other thing I was going to say before. The part when they were talking about, oh, crud. Oh, no, I've lost it now, Mike. I had something poignant to say. I promise it was something.
All right.
Really,
well,
good.
You got to think about it and come back to it. So the other thing that was funny is that I got a kick out of in the Scotty Burrell discussion, and clearly Scotty Burrell was one of the guys that he kind of targeted, and then they made a point in the doc of highlighting the fact that Burrell had 23 in that first round series against the Nets in a game and played really well, just to kind of illustrate that Jordan's pushing of Scotty Burrell lifted him up to the point that he was able to get 23 points in a playoff game and help the team win a game. And I thought that was interesting. And they had the one clip of Jordan guarding Burrell in practice, and Burrell was kind of posting up and he caught the ball, and Jordan's just standing there, like looking around and not in a stance, not ready to play, just kind of looking around like, this guy, what's his problem? And then Burrell kind of turns in towards the middle, and all of a sudden Jordan just springs to life and blocks his shot. And you're just like, yeah, I've seen that before, but usually it's with like an adult and like a 12-year-old. You don't usually see it with two professional basketball players where one guy's just kind of standing there, not even guarding him, kind of mocking him. And then when the guy finally does go to do something, he just blocks his shot. So that was, I thought, a funny moment in the doc tonight for sure.
Yeah. Oh, the thing I was going to say is the quote, the exact quote the exact quote with the baseball bat. Do you want the exact quote? I'll edit it so that it's not terrible.
Sure, go ahead.
Try talking when it's 0-0 BI.
Yeah.
It was try talking blank when it's 0-0 BI.
Or when you're behind.
Yeah, or when you're behind, but
not when you're ahead.
It was pretty good with the quote with the cigar in his mouth.
I mean, the quotes were great and the quotes were fantastic, but just the image of him chewing on that cigar and swinging and just repeatedly swinging the baseball bat was just, I mean, it just cracked me up to no end. I was dying like watching that. I'm like, oh my God, this guy is just, he's ready to go.
Yeah, I agree.
I enjoyed the George Carl.
Oh yeah, George Carl.
George Carl didn't say hello.
How about Jan Calipari? How about John Calipari was coaching the Nets? I forgot about that one.
Yeah, there you go. Very, very, very short stint with the New Jersey Nets before he made his way back to the college ranks. But yeah, when George Carl didn't say hello to him in the restaurant, another fellow Carolina guy, you could see that really made him mad. And he's like, yeah, I got to get George. Jordan had so many grudges against people.
The guy from Washington that scored 37 points, and he's like, I'm going to get
Bradford, LeBradford Smith.
I never heard of that guy before before his name got brought up today. So
he was a high school star and he played at Louisville, came in the league, really good athlete. But yeah, I remember that very clearly. That story was one that was, you know, out there for a long time. And it's just amazing that you can be playing at the professional level, at the highest level of your sport, and just decide on a given night, I'm going to take it to this guy, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. And then just to have the ability to go out and do it it's just incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
I wonder why they didn't interview LeBradford Smith for the documentary. That would have been pretty good. Because, I mean, they pulled Jeremy Piven in. I'm sure. Did you even know who Jeremy Piven was, Mike? I want to ask you that.
I did know he was an actor. Yes, I did know he was an actor.
Okay, I didn't know if you were up to, like, the Entourage deal or not. Like, if you watched that show ever or not.
I never watched that show, but I do know that Jeremy Piven's an actor. I cannot tell you any of his credits, but I do know he's an actor.
Like when they had Jeremy Piven on there, like, I was like, are you serious? Like, what? You couldn't have gotten a dot like the. Where's Marv Albert during this whole thing? Why didn't they interview him? Like, that's crazy to me. It seems like they really I guess they really didn't interview any of the TNT guys, did they? I wonder if they weren't allowed to. Like, when you think about it, I mean, Reggie's really the only one so far, right? Because they didn't interview Shaq, they didn't interview Kenny, they didn't interview Marv, they didn't interview Fratello. True. I mean, none of the TNT guys got interviewed. The other thing I noticed too is a lot of these on the call games. Hubie Brown, how long has he been calling games, Mike? I know
he's been around for a long time,
but he was there. He was calling games in this documentary again today. So
yeah, Hubie's been around a long time, man.
Fun fact about LeBradford Smith. Fun fact about LeBradford Smith, Mike. You ready for this? He shares a birthday with my wife.
Oh, nice. There you go.
I was just doing this thing. He only lasted 3 years in the NBA, averaged 9.3 points per game in one season, but the other two seasons, not very good. So,
yeah, I think he had a disappointing career based on what people thought he might be coming out of college, because he was a good athlete. He was an athletic player. Like, he was probably 6'2", 6'3", maybe something like that. But Jordan decided that he was going to take it to him.
Yeah.
The legalized Kemp sign.
Oh, that was good. I liked that a lot. I thought that was funny. That was good.
Yeah, that was funny. Sean Kemp, I thought, kind of got the short shrift in the description of his game. Did you hear that?
A good alley-oop partner.
Yeah, a good alley-oop partner. I'm like, at that point in his career, Kemp was a lot more than a good alley-oop partner. I think Kemp averaged, if I'm not mistaken, he averaged like 28 points a game in that finals. Somewhere in there.
I'm going to pull it up right now. I'm a basketball reference.
There you go.
So wait, that was 90.
That was the 96 final.
95-96. That season he averaged He only averaged 19.6 points per game in that season.
Yeah, but I'm saying in the finals. I'm saying just in the finals.
In the finals. Okay, so here's the finals. He scored in the finals against Chicago. He scored 32, 29, 14, 25, 22, and 18. And he had, for rebounds, he had 8, 13, 4, 11, 10, and 14. So he averaged double-double.
He averaged 23 and 10 in the finals. So yeah, that's pretty good.
Yep. Yeah. His Sean Kemp's best season, Mike, was with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Can you believe that? That's not
really.
Highest points per game was with the Cavs.
Must have been his first year with the Cavs.
No, it was his second year with the Cavs. He averaged 9.2 rebounds per game and averaged 20.5 points per game.
See, I would have guessed.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. I would have guessed that he was.
His free throw percentage was that season was the highest, except for his second to last season. He shot 79% from the free throw line. He averaged the most free throws that season, though. He averaged 9 free throws a game that season with the Cavs. That's crazy.
I mean, Kemp was good, right? You know, right out of the gate. I mean, he averaged 6 as a real rookie, but then his second year in the league, he was averaging 15 and 8. So at 21 years old, and that's a guy who, again, had he kind of stayed on his trajectory, you know, I mean, he really fell off a cliff after his third year with the Cavs, and then we traded him. You know, he left and went to Portland, and so it just his career kind of went downhill quick. He got out of shape and never was the guy that he was early in his career. He might be, in all honesty, the second best in-game power dunker ever after Dominique.
You wouldn't put Shaq up there?
Shaq, just from an athleticism standpoint. I mean, Shaq, powerful, but not the same level of athleticism and maybe flair that Dominique and Sean Kemp had.
Okay. I'll buy it.
Yeah. I don't know. There's some great Sean Kemp dunks out there, by
Listen,
the way.
Listen, I will say when I play NBA Jam, I used to always play as Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. Those are my they were my jam.
Fair enough. That was a good team. The Bulls beat. And Detlef Schrempf was on there for sure. Derek McKee, I think, was on that team.
Yeah.
But Nate McMillan was definitely on that team. Yeah, I think it's interesting that 72-10 team, the 96 Bulls, that took them 6 games to take out Seattle, which again, just I keep going back to, I had other things on my mind, and I just can't get that out of my head. And did he really want to win the thing on Father's Day? That's a question now I'd want to ask. Like I would have wanted a follow-up question with Jordan after he said that. Hey, did you orchestrate this thing to be able to win it on Father's Day?
Yeah, that'd be pretty crazy. I don't know.
No, I don't think he did, but I'm just saying. I think it's just I don't know what that quote means. Like, what does that mean? I had other things on my mind. What other things? What was on his mind at that point?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
I have no idea. Well, I love just the competitiveness of him that you saw tonight in these two episodes. I think that, like I said, my favorite quote still is winning has a price, leadership has a price. And if you look at players, teams, people who have been successful at the highest level, I think that's true. You have to sacrifice. You have to be willing to work hard. There are things that you have to do that leaders and winners do that people who aren't leaders and winners just won't do. And you could see it when they were talking to modern day Jordan and just the emotion that would come out when he was talking about his teammates and trying to push them. And these two episodes probably brought back for me, I think, more emotion than any of the other episodes, just from a standpoint of one, kind of inspiring me and making me remember why I loved and continue to love Jordan so much, is just that competitive desire to crush anybody who's in his path, and just we'll do whatever it takes to win. So there was that piece of it. And then I also think too, when the statement "I'm back" came out, when he came back, I just remember how excited and thrilled I was to be able to have an opportunity to watch this guy play basketball again. Because when he walked away the first time, at that point, he's 30 years old. And you just couldn't believe. You're like, he's not going to play anymore. I'm never going to be able to see this guy play ever again. And not only was it the fact that he was the greatest player in the game at the time, but I had loved him from the time he was at North Carolina. So he was clearly far and away my favorite player, not just because he was the best player, but just because I loved him from the time he was a college player. And so when he decided to come back, I just remember those two words, and I just remember how excited I was just to be able to have an opportunity to see him play. It's kind of like we were able to experience that to some degree with LeBron here in Cleveland, that when he was here, the fact that you have this guy on your hometown team that you get to watch all the time and just appreciate how great he is, that's the same sort of relationship is the wrong word, but that's the same sort of connection that I felt to Jordan at that time in my life. And I'm sure that there were millions of other people that felt that exact same flood of emotions when he came back. Like, man, we're going to get to watch this guy play again for however many years he's going to continue to come back and play. And I just, man, it was just so exciting to have him back on the floor.
Yeah. You know, I thought that, you know, there'd always been rumors. Like, I remember hearing rumors in, like, even in 2005 that he was thinking about coming back. I just remember that because I was a senior in high school and people were talking about it. And I was like, there's no way he's going to come back. But, like, looking at how competitive he was, like, I guess I should have never put it past him, because I know that the Wizards thing was never, you know, I'm thinking there's zero chance they're even going to talk Wizards, Mike, at this point. Right? Do you agree?
Well, you got two more series you got to get through on the front end.
Yeah.
Because you got to get through, because they were just tipping off the Eastern Conference Finals against the Pacers, which went seven games, and which they were down in the second half of game seven in that series. So they're definitely going to talk about that. You also have, on the flashback side, you've got the 97, you got the 97 finals, which is the flu game, which you know that's got to be a part of what's going to be discussed and talked about and reminisced about, because clearly that's one of the all-time signature Michael Jordan games. So on the flashback side, I think that's what you're going to see next week, is sort of the trip through the 97 finals, the 97 season. And then as you go into this current, the second three-peat, then you'll get into the Pacers Eastern Conference final and then winning the Jazz. And
so you're saying there's zero chance there's Wizards talk at all?
Well, I don't know. I what I'm curious to see is how do you put a bow on this thing? What's the last 10, after the last commercial break, the last 10 minutes of the doc, what does that last 10 minutes of the documentary look like? How do they wrap it up? How do they summarize his career? Do they end it with 98? Is the last image the same image that we all thought we were going to have of him finishing his career? Like, do they just leave it with him making the shot and it ends? Or do they have some reaction to that shot? Do they wrap it up in some other way? Do they talk about the things that he's done since winning that 98 title? I don't know. That to me is a really, really interesting piece of what's going to happen next week, is how do they put a bow on this whole thing?
Yeah, I just don't see how they're going to make time for the Wizards thing. So that's why I don't think it's going to happen. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't think. I mean, if there's any mention of Wizards, it'll be, I think, at the end of them talking about, you know, maybe it'll be like text thing. You know how they do the text thing sometimes at the end of documentaries, right? Like telling people where everyone's at now. Michael retired, but ended up playing two more years for the Wizards, and now is the owner of the Charlotte Hornets, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I could see that. I'll be curious again to hear what the reaction is to that final sequence against the Jazz to win title number 6, from the driving layup, then the steal, and then the shot.
So, is it Stockton or Malone going to be in the episode next week?
Ooh, that's a good question. We haven't seen either one of them, have we? Other than the Dream Team clips, right?
Yeah, we haven't seen them at all.
I mean, they haven't been interviewed in present time. You would have to think that you would have wanted to get their perspective, although Karl Malone is kind of a known
curmudgeon.
Well, and he's kind of dropped off the face of the earth. Like, I don't think he's not out there. You never see him at games or hear him quoted or anything. So maybe they weren't able to get him. Stockton, I think, is a little bit more visible.
Well, his kid's in the NBA DL, D League, isn't he? G League.
Yeah, I think so. So, but it seems like you win their last two titles against those guys, it would seem like you'd have them be a part of it. Because let's go through the whole thing. Let's go through the whole sequence of it. So the first title, they have Magic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Magic's interviewed. The second title, they didn't have anybody because they beat Portland. So there was no Drexler interview talking about how Jordan beat him up and how people talking about the two of them being equals. There was nobody that was interviewed from the Trailblazers.
Yeah.
Then the next title's Phoenix. You have Barkley. You clearly had the Pistons leading into those three titles.
Well, Barkley was another TNT person I neglected to say they did have. I apologize.
True.
Okay.
They didn't necessarily have him. Neither one of those guys in the role as commentators have. They were in their role as players, Reggie Miller and Barkley.
Yeah.
So then you go to the 96 title where they had Peyton tonight. So it'll be interesting to see if they get Karl Malone or Stockton to come on camera.
Maybe they'll get Greg Ostertag.
Maybe. Maybe you get Brian Russell.
I was going to say Brian Russell. I think if I had a list of likelihood, I think Brian Russell might be the most likely of the four of them.
I could see that. I could see that.
Not necessarily. Probably the third player, as far as echelon, because I think Stockton and Malone would be above him, but I think Brian Russell is probably better than Greg Ostertag, right?
I would
rank them. So
plus just the role that he plays
could they pull up Hornacek? Hornacek's still in the NBA and got NBA circles. He could be in there too.
He could be. Yeah, he could be. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Like I said, I'm really curious to see how they go about wrapping this whole thing up, because there's a storybook ending when they win that title and he finishes it with those three iconic plays. No other Bull touches the ball in the last whatever minute, and they win that title. And I just am curious to see how they end it. Do they do what you said, where they have the text scroll at the end explaining what's happened in the intermeeting time since the 98 title is won? Do they spend a bunch of time where maybe the ending of that series is, it finishes halfway through episode 10, and then the last 30 minutes is sort of a entire career retrospective or a retrospective on those last moments, and they're talking to all the particulars? Do they address any of those things that happened after 98? I don't know. Really curious to hear where they go with it.
Could they get Jerry Sloan to do an interview, Mike?
Maybe.
I don't know. He's 78 years old at this point, and I don't know if he's still
I don't know what his status is. Yeah, yeah, I don't know what Jerry Sloan's status is.
He would be an interesting one, considering he played for the Bulls, right? If I'm not incorrect.
He did.
Oh, look at that. So,
well, and I've got to believe that we haven't really heard. That's one of the things that's been interesting, is we haven't really heard very much from opposing coaches. Yeah, we really haven't heard much from opposing coaches about what it was like to try to game plan against this guy. Yeah. Which is, I think, would be an interesting. Obviously, we all have gotten a real clear window into what it was like to play against him. We've gotten at least a little bit of a window into what it was like to play with him, but we haven't gotten a whole lot of what it was like to coach against him. And so that would be interesting to hear from some coaches about what it was like trying to game plan against Michael Jordan and what they tried to do and what their thoughts were. We got to hear a little bit of it with the Bad Boy Pistons, I guess. So they interviewed Brendan Malone and talking about the Jordan rules. But other than that, there hasn't been a whole lot of talk from coaches. So yeah. I think that would be interesting. That would be an interesting thing to see in the last two episodes. I don't know if we'll see it or not, but that would be interesting to me.
We'll have to see. I guess that's all I can really say, right?
We will have to see. All right, what's your favorite moment from tonight's two episodes? You had to pull out only one thing. What's your favorite thing?
I still think him watching the Gary Payton interview. I think that was my favorite. Just his laughing and his facial expressions were pretty choice.
Yeah, the thing that still stood out for me was the quote that winning has a price, leadership has a price. I've now said it three times during this podcast. It's just in the moment, it just gave me chills. I'm like, man, this is what being the greatest ever sounds like, looks like, feels like. And you could just feel the emotion. You could just feel his drive, his competitiveness come through the screen as he was saying those words. And then I thought they just did a great job of wrapping that quote with video that helped to cement that point. So that was probably my favorite thing. And then I also liked the image of him on the floor sobbing after winning that fourth title. Just summed up these two episodes really, really well with his relationship with his father. And then we already talked about the BJ Armstrong cigar bat scene. That was crazy.
Choice. Yeah,
that was choice. That was
hey, how about the fact that Mike was still getting paid his full salary and as the NBA player when he was playing baseball? I thought that was pretty cool. That was pretty good.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good deal. Reinsdorf took care of it.
Do you think if you quit your teaching job, Mike, and pursued a podcasting full-time career, that Richmond Heights would pay you for your teaching still?
I don't think they would, although what we're doing right now feels a little bit like that. But I don't think they would go. I don't think they would go for that. I don't think I could go and change careers and still collect a teaching paycheck. I'm not sure that that's how things would work, but it's a pretty good deal if you can get it. If you're Michael Jordan, you got a lot better shot than if you're Michael Cleansing. I'll put it that way.
Ooh, Michael Cleansing. I don't know if I've ever heard you referred to as Michael, Mike.
Only my mom and my dad, I guess. That's about the only people that have ever called me Michael in my whole life. I don't think I've ever been a Michael to anybody besides them.
At your wedding, did they say Michael or did they say Mike?
I'm pretty sure they said Mike, but I couldn't tell you. I can't say I remember, but I'm pretty sure it was Mike. I've never been anything but Mike as far as my name.
You just wanted to be like Mike.
That's right. Be like Mike.
All right.
Anything else?
No, I don't know. I'm looking forward to the last two episodes, but I'm also like dreading the last two episodes because then
it's going to be terrible that this thing is going to end.
Hey. But there's a positive, Mike, that the following week, golf is back and it's going to be Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning versus Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady on that following Sunday at 2:00 on TNT. That's going to get crazy ratings. I know you won't watch it, but I will be tuned in. So that's going to be my brief happiness about getting closer to maybe having some sports on the TV.
All right, let me say this. There's a 10% chance that might get thrown on the TV if you send me a text and remind me that it's on.
Okay.
But even if it is on, that will provide me with zero solace in the fact that this documentary is finished and that I'm not going to be able to consume any more brand new Jordan content. This thing, I've said it every week, that 2 hours goes by so fast. It touches on so many meaningful moments of my life and just things that I remember, feelings that I had, and just the sheer joy that I got from watching Michael Jordan play a game that I love and play it better than anybody ever has. And when this ends, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to know that there isn't more of it coming because it's just been so much fun to watch. And I'm so appreciative of the fact that we've been able to see it, that Jordan was willing to do it. And it's just provided us with so many great moments that there's going to be things that are going to be replayed from this documentary over and over and over again for the rest of our lives. And I'm just glad it was able to be made, and I've enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yep. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, what happens next, because I wouldn't be surprised, Mike, riding the coattails of this. I wouldn't be overly surprised if they speed, I won't say speed up, but they get that Kobe Bryant one made for next year. Like, it's not going to be as momentous or anything, but I think, you know, ESPN, if they're smart, they're going to try to take this and learn from it and go in different directions. And there's probably other things that could possibly eventually be made. I think it'd be interesting. Like, I think a true Tiger Woods documentary like this would be something really interesting. I know it's not basketball, but just seeing, especially with everything that's happened with him at this point, I think it would be supremely interesting to watch him do one with him down the line. I don't know if I can think of any baseball players, you know, that would be interesting, but I think, and LeBron will have something for whenever he retires. We know that's
going to
happen. Jeter would be cool. I think Jeter would be cool. I think a full-fledged documentary, if they had one, of the Maguire-Sosa stuff, that would be kind of interesting to watch. I don't think they do have anything going on with that, but that would be just an interesting one to watch. But I, you know,
just like, think about any. You just think anybody who's a megawatt star in any field, in any sport, that if you had the kind of access that they had in this season to be able to get some of the behind the scenes stuff that they were able to get for this, would be interesting.
We might be able to get a Tom Brady one, because Belichick illegally tapes things. So we might be able to get a Tom Brady one.
I think those cameras are all in the opposing team's locker rooms and meetings, not in his own. So I mean, we might be able to get some on some other teams, but maybe not necessarily on the Patriots. I don't know, but I just think no matter what sport, if you had this kind of access and you had compelling figures, I think it would make for interesting TV, which is kind of what the success of the 30 for 30 series shows. That if you have compelling video and you have good filmmakers and storytellers, that you can make interesting things that people want to watch, and that can make even a story that isn't as big compelling. This obviously takes it to a whole nother level, because you have the footage, you have the story, and then you have the megawatt superstar who, at the point when this is all being filmed, is at the absolute peak of his popularity and athletic prowess. He's at the top of the game. And so to be able to put all those factors together is what makes it really, really special. And then clearly just the timing of when it's being released, the fact that there's nothing else out there for people to watch, to consume, to look at, makes it an even bigger event than it would have been if they had released it when they originally planned to. Clearly for you and for me and for basketball fans and people who love Michael Jordan, we would have watched it and enjoyed it no matter when it was on. But I think that the fact that it's filling this void that we all have for live sports and missing the NBA in particular, the fact that it's coming in during this time has made it even more special. And it's just, as I've said numerous times, I think it's been phenomenal. And from my perspective, as somebody who lived through it live in the moment, to be able to go back and revisit things that I remember, things that I forgot, maybe things that I didn't know, of which there have been a couple, and then to see modern day Jordan reacting to what was happening back in that time and seeing the videos on the iPad, that's been worth the price of admission, let's put it that way.
I agree completely. Yep.
All right, let's wrap it up there. We're coming up close to an hour, so it is now 2:05 a.m. as we're finishing this up. We want to thank you for joining us for this wrap-up of The Last Dance, Episode 7 and 8. We will be back next week for the grand finale, Episodes 9 and 10. Looking forward to those two episodes. Looking forward to next week's pod. Not looking forward to the end of the doc, but we appreciate you hanging out with us tonight. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Coaches, we've teamed up with Coach Tyler Whitcomb so you can now purchase his exclusive new playbooks right from the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from John Calipari of Kentucky, Leonard Hamilton from Florida State, and Mike Young of Virginia Tech. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.